I call the series A Root of All Evil. And that's the love of money. Love of money, a root of all evil. So we're talking here in the, come to the New Testament. We went through the book of Proverbs. We showed that the Proverbs talked about work is right, good. The sluggard is considered to be almost in this statement of, in the category of a sinner. Whereas the Proverbs exalt hard work, diligence, good thinking, early rising, and that kind of performance. We come to the New Testament, and Jesus is warning in the New Testament that the wealth has a seductive side to it, a way to seduce you away from God and away from trusting God. And we saw that last time. I want to come to the book of Luke today. In Luke chapter 12, Jesus said, in beginning in verse 15, he then said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even," and this is the key factor, "for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." Your life must never consist of your possessions. Think what happens if that were to happen. You can lose possessions. So he told them a parable about a man who was very rich and very productive, and the man had a lot of land, and his land yielded great amounts, and he didn't know what to do because he had smaller barns. So he said, "I know what I'll do. I'll just go ahead and build bigger barns, and I'll store the production," which is a smart thing and a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But here's where it goes wrong. Then he said, "This is what I'll do." This is in verse 18, Luke 12, verse 18. "I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and then I will store all my grain and my goods." So far, so good. But verse 19, "And I will say to my soul," soul, that is, it may say to myself, you're saying to yourself, "soul, self, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." Forget all other responsibilities. Eat, delve yourself into all the pleasures. Eating is a pleasure. Take your ease, it's a pleasure. Drink is a pleasure. And be merry. Delve into all the sensual pleasures of life. But God said to him, "You fool, this night your very soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So this is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." You know, in the book of Revelation chapter 3, one of the things that God condemned the church at Laodicea for was this. And this is, I'm just not going to read the whole passage, but these two verses, Revelation 3, verse 17, "Because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing." You see, people can think, if I've got the material and I've got the material wealth, then I don't need anything. What else do I need? I have need of nothing. And he said, "And you don't know that you are wretched and miserable, poor, blind, and naked. Because you think you've done very well." So what does Jesus now tell us? Taking off of Luke chapter 12, let's come to Matthew chapter 6. And Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 19. Now, Jesus talked a lot about, what God would provide. And he comes into verse 19 here, and he says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth." That's an interesting Greek wording. The Greek wording would be, if you were to read it literally, it would be like this: "Stop treasuring up treasures." It's the same Greek word, treasures, and it becomes a verb word. Stop treasuring up treasures. Now, the fact that you're saying stop treasuring It's an ongoing process, and he's saying, stop that process. Stop it. Stop treasuring up treasures. And what does he say? For yourself on earth. On earth. And then he says, where moth and rust destroy it. See, people on earth who are unconverted, they try to provide a means for their own resources. I want to find a way in which I provide for myself all the benefits of life, and that I can make my life just what I want through my efforts on this earth. And they think they will acquire the things that will lead to a happy, productive, and beneficial life. So the grammatical construction here shows there's a temptation for human beings to provide this for themselves on earth. The word treasures. In the ancient world, wealth came from three basic sources. When Jesus said treasures, what did you mean? It came from clothing, foodstuffs, various foods, and precious metals or jewels. Those three were the main sources of people's wealth. Clothing, foodstuffs, including animals. You have a herd, and you know all that foodstuffs. Grain, herds of cows, sheep, and so on. And precious metals or jewels. Now, each of these, Jesus said, listen to what he said, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in. Moth and rust can destroy them. The word destroy in the Greek means to disfigure it or to cause it to disappear. Part of that word is used as a consumption. You know, you can eat, you can consume something and take it away. Where moth and rust does destroy it. And where thieves break in. Now, the Greek word literally means to break in, means to dig through. Thieves dig through. Now, in ancient times, how were houses constructed? It was just constructed out of mud, out of, you made your house from this mud that dried and you watered it. It's like a concrete, but it was a mud thing. And what did thieves do with that? They broke through it. They broke into it, and they would help themselves to your things. So Jesus is saying, you got to be careful here because you don't want to store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Stop treasuring treasures on earth. But conversely, in verse 20, what does he say? But store up, that is, and it's the same Greek word, treasure up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Treasure up treasures in heaven, where neither moth. Now, you know, you can have, you ever put stuff aside and you kept it for a long time, and moths will even get into food. They will get in, you know, they'll lay eggs, and next thing you know, you got all these moths and little larvae or into your food. And it's hard to keep things forever. And it's hard to keep things in the think that you have this set aside. Silver and gold can be stolen. Money can be stolen. Clothing can, you know, moths get into it and eat it. And all kinds of things happen to things on earth, treasures on earth. But he says, store up, treasure up things in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys it. And where thieves, if you've got it in heaven's bank, they do not break in and steal it. Can't steal it from you. And then he says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. In other words, your heart is either on things on the earth, or your heart, I mean, this is the context now. I know people have taken that out of context and, you know, tell you where you spend your money, that's where your heart is. But what he's talking about here is your heart will follow your treasure. If your treasures are on the earth, guess where your heart is. If your treasures are in heaven, where do we want to look to? Where should our heart be? Where should our eyes be set? Our heart, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So that's Jesus' statement. Store up treasure, in heaven as opposed to on earth. And what did Peter say? 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 4. He says, we're going to obtain an inheritance, 1 Peter 1, verse 4, an inheritance which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away. Reserved. Where is that inheritance reserved? Reserved in heaven for you. Reserved in heaven for you. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19 here. Here's what he says. Paul writes, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but fix their hope on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. That's 1 Timothy chapter 6. The Apostle Paul, writing off of Jesus' instructions. Paul is, you know, virtually reworking and quoting Jesus' own statements in Matthew 6. Luke chapter 12, we were just there. He's telling us that you seek the kingdom of heaven first and all these things will be added. That's Luke chapter 12, verse 29. Now, when he says all these things will be added, does it mean they will be added to you if you just sit and pray, but you do no work at all, you don't do anything at all? I don't think that's the idea here. I don't think that's what he's talking about. Let me read Luke chapter 12, verse 31. But seek first the kingdom of heaven, and these things will be added. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to charity. Make yourselves money belts which do not wear out. In other words, if you want a money belt that doesn't wear out, make sure that your treasure's in heaven and nobody will steal it. A money belt that will not wear out. And then he says, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes, nor any moth destroys. That's Luke chapter 12 and verse 29, 30, 33. Verse 34, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Because your treasure, your heart follows your treasure. If it's on earth, that's where your heart is on earth. If it's in heaven, that's where your heart is in heaven. And in Mark chapter 4, Jesus, when he talked to his disciples in chapter 4 of Mark, he was giving them an idea of what would happen, how the word of God is taken away by the deceitfulness of riches in this parable of the sower. And in Mark chapter 4, he comes down to verse 24, and he says this, take care what you listen to. I'm going to read that in the Complete Jewish Bible because for some reason, the New American Standard Version doesn't have a good translation of this. It says, take care what you listen to. By your standard of measure, it will be measured. That's the New American Standard. But here's what the Complete Jewish Bible says. Pay attention to what you are hearing. Because Jesus is just telling them in verse 19 that the worries of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires of other things either enter in and they choke out the word and it becomes unfruitful. He's talking about how the deceitfulness of riches choke out the word. Well, here in Mark chapter in verse 24, Complete Jewish Bible reads it like this. He also said to them, pay attention to what you are hearing. The measure with which you measure out will be used to measure to you and more besides. So if you are giving and you are helping and you know how to give to others, it will be given to you in the same measure. You measure out in this little measure, what's the measure you will get back? A little measure. You get back a little measure, you give a little measure, that's what you get back. In Luke chapter 6, Jesus says in verse 38, Luke 6, verse 38, give and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return. So here is the New Testament statements on wealth. Now in the book of Matthew, chapter 23, he says, "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees!" Now he's a little upset with them because they took advantage. And it's a very interesting word in Matthew chapter 23, verse 25. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you are full," listen to this phrase, "full of robbery and self-indulgence." You remember what we read in the book of Luke there? The farmer says, I'll set all this aside, I'll get bigger barns, and then I'll say to my soul, soul, take ease, have pleasure, eat, drink, and be merry. He said, you're full, he says this to the Pharisees, you're full of robbery. Now, that Greek word had to do with plundering. Robbery, you know what a robber is, he just comes up and takes it from you. And in the book of Luke, chapter 11, verse 39, "Now you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup," this is Luke 11 and verse 39, "but you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and plate, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness." A different words in Luke chapter 11. "Full of robbery and self-indulgence." And look at Luke and look at Mark. He condemns this greed, this love of money which they had. And the Bible says, we read earlier, that the Pharisees who were lovers of money. In Mark chapter 12, in his teaching, this I'm going to read beginning in verse 38. Mark 12, beginning in verse 38. In his teaching, he was saying, "Beware of the scribes, who like to walk around in long robes. They like respectful greetings in the marketplace, and the chief priests in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets." Listen to this phrase in verse 40. "Who devour." Now that Greek word meant it was like an act of seizure. They grab it. It means robbery. It's the same Greek word. Plunder. That Greek word means robbery. They devour, plunder, seize. Okay? Widows' houses. "And for appearance sake, they offer long prayers. These will receive the greater condemnation." They like to offer long prayers, you know, for appearance. And you know, they want everybody to see it. Do it in front of people so everybody can see how you're praying. But what did Jesus say? Don't do it in front of people. Do it where nobody can see it. Only God sees it. But they devour. They were greedy, love of money. Now, in the New Testament, there is a responsibility. The New Testament places a responsibility on your ability to utilize and use properly your finances. In fact, in the book of Matthew, chapter 25, one of the parables of Jesus was the parable of the talents. Now, a talent was a sum of money, a fairly large sum of money. And in verse 31, in this chapter of Matthew, you have the parable of the talents. "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all his angels with him, he will have his glorious throne and he will sit before the nations." He's going to call them all in. And based on what they did with, how they did with their money, whether they visited the poor, whether they helped out people, whether they could be generous with others, they will be judged on that. parable of the talents and the pounds is how much money they were given and that they could trade and develop more. So money is a factor of life. We can't get away from it. We have to use it. We have to be a part of the world and earn it. And we have to work for it. What does the Bible say? 6 days shall you labor and do all your work. And the seventh day is this day of rest. So Paul, when Paul's writing in the New Testament, he takes the attitude almost of the Proverbs. I want to read you Paul's statements in various letters in the New Testament. This is the book of Ephesians, chapter 4 and verse 28. Apostle Paul lays down a rather strong command here. He who steals must steal no longer. So he had people in the congregation. Some people were shoplifters. They stole. They pick up here and they pick up there. They steal. He who steals must steal no longer. Contrarywise, but what is he supposed to do? This is Ephesians 4, verse 28. But rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who has need. All of us, you know, have to work to see if we can have something that we can share if somebody has a need. Now, it doesn't mean, you know, you have to give all your money away, but let's say someone has a need. Do you have anything to share? If you're working hard and you're doing, with your hands. Now, the word work with your hands does not mean that you have to be grabbing it with your hand and, you know, you have to have a wrench or you have to use a hammer. Work with your hands. Hands means it's your responsibility to do, that you do it. You perform whatever the work is. You might work with your brain. You might work in other ways. You might work in various professions. You might be a creative person that does creative things. You can perform, you can sing, you can dance, you might do other things that earn money. There are all kinds of ways to earn money. With your hands means that you did it. It came from you. So Paul says he's got to stop stealing and he's got to go to labor. He must labor performing with his own hands. In other words, do his own work. That's what it means. You do the work yourself, what is good. Do a good work. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, the Apostle Paul says in verse 11, 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 11, he says, and he's to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. What is a quiet life? I mean, you're not out reveling. You're not out getting drunk every night. You're not out doing all kinds of crazy stuff. A quiet life. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands. Attend to your own business and work. And work, do your responsibility. Do what you are supposed to do. Tend to your own business and work with your hands just as we commanded you, so that you will behave properly toward outsiders and, listen, not be in any need. What's the best thing each person in a society can do? The best, you know, you're doing your job, your responsibility in a society if you take care of yourself. You provide for yourself, you work so that you don't have any need. And maybe if you work hard enough and you have other things, you might be able to help someone else. That's one of the primary responsibility of each citizen, of each church member. So he says, you know, work with your hands, lead a quiet life, attend to your own business, attend to what you're supposed to do, and work with your hands. Do it yourself. just as we commanded you, so that you behave. Now, do it yourself doesn't mean that you can't be an executive and give orders to other people to do it. Of course you can, because we see these statements in the Lord said, you know, the master came and he said, I want so many to work on this time or that time. And that's fine. That's perfectly okay. But he's attending to his business. He's doing it himself. He's telling other people what to do. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 8. Nor did we eat. Now, the Apostle Paul is commanding. He's saying, you know, when we were with you, we didn't eat anybody's bread without paying for it. We didn't expect other people just to throw it in. We paid for our own. But with labor and hardship, we kept working night and day so that we would not be a burden to any of you. He didn't ask anybody for their money. 2 Thessalonians, and that's in verse 8, dropping down to verse 10. For even when we were with you, we gave you this command. If someone won't work, he shouldn't eat. If someone won't work, he shouldn't eat. Now that sounds pretty cruel. It sounds pretty tough. It's not meant, you have to understand, if you take this and not put good sense to it, then you're going to go over here. Well, here's a crippled person in this rest home. They can't work. Well, don't feed them anything. Well, we can't take extremes. It's talking about people who can work, able-bodied people who are able to work but won't work. You notice the word "won't." Let me read it in the Christian Standard Bible. That was the complete Jewish Bible. Let me read it in the Christian Standard Bible, the same verse. This is 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10. In fact, when we were with you, this is what we commanded you. If anyone isn't willing to work, he should not eat. He's not willing. There are a lot of people who would give anything if they were crippled or they're paralyzed or they've got some kind of disease, and they say, you know, I'd give anything to be healthy and be able to go to work. I would love to be able to work. I'd love to be able to do it. If he's not willing to work at something, he shouldn't eat. In other words, you don't just feed vagrants, people who are irresponsible, people who don't, who spend their lives, just drinking and using drugs and getting high and carousing around, and then want you to support their habits. That's not what the Apostle Paul's talking about. He's talking about people who that should work, are able-bodied, could work, and should work. And so we come down to verse 11. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 11 now. For we hear that there are some among you are leading an undisciplined life. We hear that there are some people leading an undisciplined life. What does the Bible want? A disciplined life. You need to be disciplined. Discipline means you wake up. You tend to your projects, your business. You get to going to your work. You do what is your responsibility to do. You work hard. We hear that there are some leading an undisciplined life, doing no work at all, he says. Now in verse 10, just a verse before, he said they shouldn't eat. Doing no work at all, but acting like busybodies. All they want to do is go around and collect information. Do nothing but, you know, collect information, busybodies. Now, such persons we command. Now, he's commanding those people in the church that are like that. We command and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ. It's not just out of his own head. We're commanding you and exhorting you in the Lord Jesus Christ to work in quiet fashion and eat their own bread. Earn your own food. Earn your own money. That's what we command. Don't lead an undisciplined life. We hear that people are not leading a quiet life. They're not leading a disciplined life. And in 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul really sets forth a strong statement here. But if anyone does not provide for his own, he is And especially for those of his own household, provide food, provide money, provide help, provide sustenance. If anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Worse. The Apostle Paul takes a rather strong stand here, just as he would if he were talking about the Proverbs. It just reminds you of the Proverbs. You know, the sluggard that stays in and he folds his hands. He won't even eat what he catches. He can't hardly raise his hand to his mouth when he has a fork full of food and all that. These are the Proverbs that make fun of this. In the book of Proverbs, talking about here, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially of those of his household. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 13, Proverbs 13, verse 22, it says that a good man leaves an inheritance, a treasure, for his children's children. Goes beyond your children, your children's children. But every one of us is going to leave a legacy of some sort. What is a legacy? A legacy is what you legally leave. You know, ready or not, sooner or later, everything you own will pass to someone else. You know that, right? Treasured or forgotten. Everything you own is going to pass to somebody else. You protect certain things and you think they're so valuable and you want them and you shine them and you take, and one day you won't be here, ready or not. Sometimes we like to get ready for it, but sometimes we can't get ready for it. An accident can happen, something can happen, and everything you own will pass on. That's your legacy. That's part of your legacy. What you leave behind legally is your legacy to the future generation and to the world in general. Every one of us leaves something as a legacy. You can leave a good legacy or you can leave a bad legacy. Adolf Hitler left a very bad legacy. He destroyed Germany. Thousands, maybe millions of lives died because of what his ideas and his determination and what he got Germany to do. How many German young men and women died because of his legacy? What is the legacy you hear? You want to spit on his name. It's revulsion. It's his name brings up bad feelings, Adolf Hitler. And that's only because of what he did. His legacy was a bad one. People can leave good legacies because they lead a good life. If you lead a good life, if you do right, what are you leaving? First of all, what are you leaving to your children? What kind of legacy? Now, you may not have much. I know people leave mounds of money to kids, but they never gave them much attention. They never gave them a sense of self-esteem. They never gave them a sense of love. They never brought them in where they could say, you know, that my dad gave me a legacy, that he was there for me. He had confidence in me. He had a feeling of that I was worth something, that I could do something. What legacy are you going to leave in the world when you die? What are they going to say about you? That you were what? That you worked hard, that you didn't work hard, that you were a good person, that you weren't a good person. What legacy is going to be left behind in your reputation? Your name, a good name, is better, says the Proverbs, says Ecclesiastes, than precious ointment. Precious ointment could be worth a lot of money, but your good name is worth more. What are people going to hear when they hear your name, a legacy that you leave? And every one of us is going to leave one. It's not a matter of saying, well, I don't think I'll leave one. You are going to leave one, whether you want to or not. Because you're going to die one day. And whatever you leave, your reputation, your name, all the things you've done, good or bad, that's going to be your legacy. And it's going to pass on, and other people are going to hear it. What is it you're going to leave? What are you going to leave to your family? Are you going to just leave material, or are you going to leave something that people say, you know, this is what my dad, my mother left me in memories, in good times, in good advice, in love, in care. I knew they cared for me. I knew they wanted me. I knew they wanted to help me. What is your legacy? We need to think about it, because every responsible person needs to think about the legacy they will leave behind. Every president, you know, when they get out of office, they goof up things while they're in office, and they get out, well, how can I rectify my legacy? I need to leave a legacy. I need to do something. I need to start a foundation. I need to do charitable work. I need to do something so that people will think well of me after I've left the presidency. They were trying to leave a legacy. What is it? Everybody's going to. You're going to, whether you want to or not. A good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. If you have children, what will your grandchildren say about you? If you have people, what will those people say about you when they teach their children? What will my granddaughters, for instance, and my Molly's granddaughters, what will our granddaughters say about us to their children? We were nice, we were good. What would they say? I don't know. We were bad, we were stupid, we were scoundrels. What would they say? You're leaving a legacy, whether you want to or not. But a responsible person has a responsibility to leave a legacy that will make the world and the society they live in a little better. You and I are inheritors of the legacies of many millions of people who went before. We have a legacy. Somebody built this podium, I didn't build it. Somebody built this building we're in, I didn't build it. You didn't build it. There are legacies that people have left of inventions and other things that we are inheritors for. I am so in debt to people like Mr. Strong that did Strong's exhaustive concordance, to Walter Bauer whose wonderful work of the Greek lexicon is translated by Art and Gingrich into English. He did a wonderful study of people who've translated books and things that they've left a legacy. There are people translated this. I didn't translate this out of Hebrew and Greek. I have the legacy here of people who did. And you and I have to leave a legacy of something. What will it be? Will it be worth anything? At this point in life, legacy is a legal, is your legal things that you leave when you die. What will it be? It's got to be more than just physical material. If it's just physical material, I mean, that's like the least of all legacies. It's your reputation. It's the character you build each and every day. It is, in fact, a part of that legacy is what you're storing in heaven. The kingdom of heaven. Where is our citizenship? It is in heaven. Now, Jesus Christ is going to bring it all back, yes. But where is our citizenship? Where are our treasures? Every day. Every day, in every way, whether you mean to or not. Every day, in every way, you, brethren, are building a legacy, and you're building a treasure. Will it be on earth, or will it be in heaven?